From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt. Noel is on adventures.
They call me Ben. We are joined with our guest super producer, Tari Harrison. So everybody drop by our various social medias and give her a hello. Thank her for saving the show. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. And that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know a very, very strange episode. An episode that draws in allegations of the paranormal, the occult, cults in specific, and much, much more.
And just numbers, numerology a little bit, to a small extent, but to a larger extent, coincidence.
I'd like to open today's episode with a quote from a poem many of us in the audience will recognize. Could we get just a little bit of ominous music? April is the cruelest month, breeding lilacs out of the dead land, mixing memory and desire, stirring dull roots with spring rain. That's just the first four lines of The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot.
Wow.
And it's useful for our purposes today because we just see the beginning of some of the themes that Eliot is working with throughout The Wasteland. You had to read that, I'm sure, at some point, like high school, college, read it for fun. It's a creepy poem.
It is. And it characterizes April in a very different way than I think maybe a lot of us see April, at least especially in the southeastern United States and a couple other places, where April seems to be really when spring starts happening.
Right.
You know, you have a lot of March. Then once you get into April, that's when all the pollen starts showing up, at least around these parts. That's when the flowers start blooming. Seems really happy and not at all a wasteland.
Right. We even say often in English and especially in the southeastern part of the United States that April showers bring May flowers.
There you go.
It's a time of rejuvenation, resurrection after the symbolic death of the world in winter, right?
And symbolic death and or real death of Jesus Christ.
Right, exactly, which, you know, is mythologically an ancient concept that goes back to, you know, the resurrected vegetable god, you know, even the ideas of gods that were dismembered by their followers to ensure harvest. There is a ton of folklore here, and it goes very, very deep. But for our purposes today, we have to say that April is a month full of symbolic contradiction, right? Today, in these, our modern times, April is, as you said, Matt, it's the beginning of spring. You know what I mean? Let's all go hunt for plastic eggs in someone's lawn, right?
There you go.
But in times past, it was much more important, especially when people were much more closely tied to an agrarian lifestyle and living off the land.
And just one last thing to put in here. Symbolically, in order for a rebirth to occur, what must there be? Death, right?
That's correct, yes. And now, speaking of these, our modern days, let's take a look. Let's all zoom out in our imaginary Google Earth maps so far that we can see this blue dot, our own little spaceship, right, orbiting the sun. This is a huge world, at least as far as we're concerned. It's also imperfect. And let's zoom back in a little bit further and let's focus just on the United States for now, just on North America. For the past few decades, Americans have encountered numerous horrific domestic events such as bombings, mass murders, acts of terrorism, spree killing, and so on, often resulting in the deaths of dozens or in some cases hundreds of people. And sadly, Tragically, for most of us, the endless march of these events can blend together at times.
I like what you did there with the endless march.
Oh, yes. That was unintentional. But yes, it's true, right? I mean, you know, think about the horrific occurrence of school shootings.
Yeah.
Right? Which have been reported at such a frequency. And let's be careful to emphasize that word, reported at such a frequency, that there were times when you and I were here in the office working on something, talking about something, and then we would be talking about two different school shootings because so many had happened.
Yeah, yeah, we didn't realize in the moment that we're talking about two different ones.
Mm-hmm, exactly. So for some of us, this has become the new normal. You turn on the news, you log into your new source of choice, or you open your morning paper and you are surprised if something has not occurred, right? But for other people, a single day or a single afternoon fundamentally changed our understanding of this country and of the world in general. If you were someone who was present during the Centennial Olympic bombing here in 1996 in Atlanta, if you were someone present during the attack on the World Trade Center on September 11th, 2001, it has inherently altered your perspective. In today's episode, we're exploring a bizarre claim related to some but not all of these tragedies. Do they seem to have, for lack of a better word, a season? You know what I mean? Like how we talked previously about the small town of Shag Harbor, it has a lobster season. It's a lobster town, but it's only through, I believe, November to a certain amount of time that they actually fish for lobster. So do these tragedies, if you look at these things that occur in the United States, is there a season where they are more likely to occur throughout the year?
Well, let's take a look back through even just the recent history, starting in 1993, and we're recording this on April 19th, 2019, and on April 19th, 1993, something happened that has been called and is known as the Waco Massacre.
Or the Waco Siege.
Waco Siege. There, it's been called a lot of things depending on which side you land on, like in your beliefs about what happened that day, but that's when an FBI assault and ATF and several other agencies led to the burning down of the compound of the Branch Davidians in Waco, Texas, and it killed 76 men, women, and children. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible and highly contentious moment or couple of days, the Waco Massacre. But that was 1993. Then in 1995, we have the Oklahoma City bombing, which killed 168 people when a bomb inside a vehicle exploded in the lower levels of the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. And then on April 20th, 1999, the Columbine High School massacre happened, where two young men killed 13 people and injured 21 others.
April 16th, 2007, the Virginia massacre occurs. 32 people are killed, 17 are injured. April 16th, 2013, the Boston Marathon explosions occur. 107 people are injured, 3 are killed.
And then on April 18th, 2013, there was an explosion at a fertilizer plant in Texas where somewhere between 5 and 15 are killed. And this happened almost exactly 20 years after the Waco massacre. And it's in roughly the same area. So that's something that we'll notice people point out at least a lot online.
And on, you'll find other incidents or other events, other tragedies, other shootings, other acts of domestic terrorism that leads people to ask, is there something off about April? Because astute listeners will notice that these widely varying events, while a few had some geographical similarities, they all occurred within the same month. That's very strange. We have to acknowledge, first off, that the proliferation of mass media allows us all to be more aware of tragedies when they do occur. So it is not necessarily true that more bad things are happening. It's just that it's easier for us to learn about these things, and more importantly, it's easier for us to remember those events because we have libraries on our phones, essentially. So is there are there more skeletons in the closet, or do we just have better flashlights or better keys to the closets?
I don't know. I mean, if you jump back to 1947, there's also something that occurred on April 16th. So like you said, like throughout history, terrible things have been happening. In this case, it was a ship that was in the port of Texas and Texas City, I guess. And it was a huge explosion because of some ammonium nitrate that was just sitting in that ship when it exploded, and it killed like 576 people. And, you know, like you said, to your point, Ben, terrible things happen all the time. It does seem a little coincidental that all of these occur in the middle of April.
Mm-hmm. And it does, secondly, appear to be a strange confluence of events. These are all incredibly violent attacks, with the exception of the 1947 thing, which could have been an accident, right? But they're all happening around the same time. So why April? What gives? Is this a coincidence, just some morbid, horrific accident?
Well, according to some researchers that you will find online, absolutely not. There's something a lot more sinister going on, something that's been happening for a long, long time. And we'll hear about it right after a quick word from our sponsor.
Here's where it gets crazy. What if these acts of violence, these explosions, these massive losses of life are not randomized? What if they are occurring to the tune or to the cadence of some earlier pre-existing pattern? That's the argument that you will hear fringe researchers make. One of the strangest, let's dive in. One of the strangest arguments is the idea that these are not accidents, these are not lone wolf acts of violence, but instead they are the result of ritualized sacrifices perpetrated by an ancient and sinister cult, a faction of people who worship the god known as Baal or Baal. Let's take a quote from a website called The Vigilant Citizen, which, for the record, is what we would consider very much conspiratorial.
Throughout many centuries and across many civilizations, the second half of April has always been a time of blood sacrifice. The worship of Baal took many names, Enlil, Molech, and spread across several civilizations. Being a sun god and a god of fertility, rituals celebrating Baal took place after the vernal equinox, a time of rebirth, and often involved human sacrifice.
So the idea here is that this god, this Baal character, was worshipped and was the beneficiary of these various acts of adulation, right, and ritualized sacrifice. And sacrifice in many religions is a normal thing. For most of us in the human species, it only becomes something that crosses the line when the things being sacrificed are people, right, like in Mesoamerican religions. However, sacrificing a bull, a ram, a goat, or a lamb, or whatever, that's completely fine. That's in line with what is considered normal.
Yeah, and you also have sacrifices in the more modern age that are much more symbolic. Giving something up, say for Lent, something to that effect, is in a way seen as a sacrifice. Stopping doing something many times is considered a sacrifice. And there are other ways to do it rather than just, you know, slaughtering cattle or something.
Sure, sure. I mean, you can argue that some religious practices we are aware of or even participate in today are ultimately descended from actual acts of sacrifice, right? So let's look at this Ball character for a second. What we know about Ball now is that Ball in popular fiction has done a lot of great things for for horror film writers. And the original phrase Ball was a title. It meant owner or lord.
Yeah, B-A-A-L, by the way, just in case.
Or B-A apostrophe A-L, depending on how you want to go. And this entity or this god went through a couple of different incarnations. So some would say there was Baal, and then there would be Baal Hamnan, who was worshipped in Carthage as their supreme god somewhere around the 5th century BCE. And
it's just something to put out. A lot of times I've heard it pronounced Baal, especially if you look at and I just recall that from the Diablo series of all things, the video game series. It's as though it would be spelled B-A-Y-L or B-A-E-L, I guess, Baal. But it changes depending on who's referring to it.
And it's also common in works of fiction to make something just slightly spelled differently. You know what I mean? Like substitute, maybe not in the case of Baal, but to substitute a Y for another vowel and demon or something like that. As a guy who read a lot of comic books in the 90s, that's very common. So this entity, the idea of Baal, appears about 90 times in Hebrew scriptures in reference to various gods. The priest of the Canaanite Baal are mentioned in, I think, most often in the first book of Kings. And people argue that you can interpret different because of the vagueness of the title, Baal, just Lord or whatever, you can interpret different local gods that were being worshipped as being referred to by their own people as Baal. You know what I mean? Sort of like how many original communities or tribes of human beings, if you ask in their native language what their word for themselves is, it translates to something like the people or the real people. So we have to be careful with this title. What they're claiming in this research is that there is a demonic god. This argument is going to be rooted in Abrahamic religion. This idea that there is a true Judeo-Christian Islamic god, and that there are demons like Baal that were confused with gods by local people.
Like by the Phoenicians.
Right. Or in Carthage. So we have that established, that Baal could be several different things to several different people. But according to the Encyclopedia Mythica and according to the argument that these fringe researchers are proposing, the practice of worshiping this Baal, whichever particular one they believe it was vilified and was at times violently suppressed by the other religions of the area and of the time, but that it survived into biblical times. And then later they'll say it survived even further. So we have a quote here from that encyclopedia. The religion of the god Baal was widely accepted amongst the ancient Jews, and although it was put down at times, it was never permanently stamped out. Kings and other royalty of the 10 biblical tribes worshipped this god. The ordinary people ardently worshipped this sun god too, because their prosperity depended on the productivity of their crops and livestock. And it goes on to describe how the god's images were erected on different buildings. There appear to be priests and classes of devotees throughout the socioeconomic strata, and that their ceremonies included, quote, burning incense and offering burnt sacrifices, occasionally consisting of human victims. The officiating priests danced around the altars, chanting frantically and cutting themselves with knives to inspire the attention and compassion of the god. And for some of us listening, this sounds pretty similar to the alleged sacrifices to Moloch, right, where people would put human sacrifices inside a hollow metal bull and then light a fire under the bull.
Yeah. And it also, it harkens back to imagery of something like the Bohemian Grove.
Exactly, yeah.
With the cremation of care sacrifices that occur. Again, very symbolic, at least from everything we can find that occur there. But the rituals sound pretty similar without the whole dancing around and cutting themselves things.
At least maybe the camera cut off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so the cremation of care is – the cremation of care is this ritual that people who attend the Bohemian Grove participate in. It's best phrased as an annual theatrical production maybe.
Yeah.
Right?
That's at the Bohemian Club.
At the Bohemian Club. So what they do – is we could talk about this for a little bit. This is interesting. If you've never heard about this, this is crazy because this is a real thing.
And we have an episode, I believe, specifically on this.
Oh, on the Bohemian Grove.
I think. But yeah, anyway, check that out if you want to know a ton about it.
Yeah.
If you just want to know the – I guess here are the hits. Presidents go there.
Journalists, captains of industry.
Yeah. And they go to summer camp, essentially, theatrical summer camp, where they all get to – B-boys.
And they get cartoonishly inebriated. According to the story, they don't discuss business or policy. Their phrase is, weaving spiders come not here.
Yeah, don't be weaving those webs.
Right. And they have a 40-foot or 12 meters for the entire rest of the world. They have a 40-foot or 12-meter hollow statue of an owl. It's an owl shrine. It's at one edge of a man-made pond, and during the Bohemian Grove get-together, during their time at summer camp, they sacrifice an effigy in front of this owl. And it happens on the first night of their summer camp. I love that phrase, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
And when they burn this effigy, it's supposed to banished all the cares of the outside world. So now you can just hang with your buddies and have fun because you have banished all your problems outside of the grove. And then also they'll say it presents symbolically the salvation of the trees by the club. The club is protecting old growth groves of redwoods.
Yeah.
So in
– The robes though.
The robes are creepy. Tell us about the robes.
There's a lot of robes. It's definitely – I can't get around just the performance factor. Even though it is a rite of some sorts, it's a performance of a rite. I don't know. It's just creepy to imagine that George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush and, you know, Nixon, Clinton, all these other people, they end up there at some point hanging out and watching this thing.
Nixon was not a fan of it.
He was not. But he was there.
He has a very explicit quote that we don't have to go into. But you can find it on Google. Just Google Nixon Bohemian Grove quote, and I guarantee you, you'll get a chuckle out of it.
And watch House of Cards season 4, maybe?
Is that in there as well?
It's a fictionalized version of it.
So it's a real thing. It's a real rite. And for many of us, it's like, hey, that's silly. You know, but we have to remember that for a long time, the existence of that rite was denied until a group of people were able to get some surreptitious hidden camera footage of the thing actually happening. And the whole thing really does happen. These people who I would ordinarily assume had better things to do with their time do get dressed up in robes. They do burn this effigy in front of this giant owl sculpture, and they have kind of a ritualized dramatic play.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the biggest questions here is, what does the owl truly represent?
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So then when you're talking about some of these ancient cults that may or may not exist to Baal or Baal or whatever, to Minerva perhaps, or to Mithra, the cult of Mithras, there are all of these different things of – what could that owl possibly represent? And that's where some of the independent researchers out there, people who really see something nefarious happening here, it's where they kind of take it a little further than maybe you would imagine.
Sure. Yeah. because then, I mean, we can get into the psychology of this a little bit later, but I think that's an excellent way to set it up. We understand that in the absence of a clear explanation, of course speculation is going to thrive. That's what human beings do, and we're – maybe this is not the best choice of words. We are devilishly good at it. So this – so not from nothing – does this idea of a cult of Baal arise?
Correct.
But the speculation and the extrapolation that a lot of these folks are making when they take this idea further is that this cult survived to modern times. Now, sure, there are a lot of, let's say, secretive religious organizations. But that doesn't make them evil. For instance, the Druze religion, D-R-U-Z-E, the Druze religion is secretive. It's not a thing everybody can join, but that doesn't make it evil, right? But the problem here is that these fringe researchers say, okay, this cult continues today, some form of it, but this practice that there's not a ton of hard proof of, this practice – of human sacrifice continues today in an altered form. Today's occult elite still observes these rites with one major difference. So gunfire replaces explosions, but also these rites are carried out on unsuspecting civilians spread across the world through mass media. This is a quotation. Fed and amplified by the fear and trauma of the masses, these mega rituals are seen by all but only celebrated by the occult elite. So the idea here too, you've probably heard this in many horror stories or you've read this in horror fiction and so on. The idea is that it's not just the murder itself that occurs, it's the mental state of the victim that is paramount to the ritual being conducted correctly. So the fear has to be there, right? The more people that see this, that encounter this, witness it, and feel fear and trauma because of it, the more powerful the ritual becomes. So you can see how this quickly goes from here are some ancient texts, here are some arguable pieces of evidence about human sacrifice from thousands of years ago. And then it jumps to here's black magic in the modern day.
Yeah. Well, and in between you get here's some weird rituals that elite peoples do. Right.
And that's the Bohemian Grove thing is one example. And again, as far as we know, the effigy has always and only been an effigy.
Yeah.
So, Matt, you mentioned earlier the existence of numerology.
Yes.
Playing a role here. What's all that about?
Well, numbers, man. The significance of numbers and letters adding up to numbers, words equaling numbers, and then the significance of the number itself. So let's look at one thing from the website Cutting Edge. So it's talking about April 19th to May 1st, and they're saying on this website that this is blood sacrifice to the beast, a most critical 13-day period. So this is basically just kind of stating out there that because of these numbers, because of 419 and or 51 and how they relate to each other within a 13-day period, it's important to sacrifice to the beast there, specifically blood sacrifice. Then fire sacrifice is specifically required at the beginning of this 13-day period on April 19th. Interesting. Where do you get all this? It's a bit of a mystery to me. Then also, according to this website, April 19th is the first day of that 13-day period, and it's also a satanic ritual day, also relating to fire. And also relating to the sun god or the ancient Phoenician sun god, Baal or Baal. And this is also known as Molech, Nimrod, and is also having to do with the Roman god Saturn. A lot of times when you're talking about fire, you're going to be speaking about a sun god, just someone who – a god that represents fire, but also Satan, you know, Saturn, which could be Satan or the devil. Again, we're talking about April 19th here specifically. They're saying that this day is really a almost – it's not a holiday, but it's a human sacrifice day. It's important to sacrifice on April 19th, and the sacrifices generally demand fire with an emphasis on younger people, on children, on early life, virgins, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's – again, this is all according to Cutting Edge. Quote, this day is one of the most important human sacrifice days and as such has some very important historic events which occur on this day.
And that's the period, you know, April 19th to May 1st, again, a 13-day period. So
yeah.
For people who believe in aspects of numerology that would apply to this line of thinking, these seem like very powerful, significant numbers. We have an episode on numerology, don't we?
We did a video on it.
We did a video.
I don't know if we ever covered it.
And you run into it sometimes. But numerology itself is not a monolithic belief system. There are people who have varying interpretations of this. So
it's a little suspect.
Yeah.
We can say that. I mean, it's a little suspect because a lot of times what we've found is that some people online who you will find using or appearing to use numerology are not necessarily using the same techniques or the same meanings for numbers and or letters to numbers. It's very fluid.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what I mean. It's not monolithic. It's not a homogeneous approach. You know what I mean?
Gotcha.
So plus whenever people begin adding up numbers or picking numbers and the way they do so varies widely, that's one of the problems. But sun gods, fertility gods, Baal, and sacrifices aside, let's look at some of the issues with this belief after a word from our sponsor. And we have, like spring, returned. So, and we didn't die in the interim.
Yeah.
So, like the concept of numerology, which we won't get into too much because I think we do have an interesting episode ahead of us in that regard, there are a couple of other problems with this idea, which shouldn't come as too much of a surprise. The first problem, let's call it the anniversary problem. According to Professor Robert Blaskowitz, the author of a blog called Skeptical Humanities and actually a professor here at our local institution of learning, Georgia Tech, there's nothing about April itself as a month that makes people inherently more violent. Instead, he argues, it comes down to anniversaries. I have a quote here. He says, the reason why we see certain types of political violence in mid to late April is because of a few unhappy coincidences. That Waco happened to fall on the anniversary of the battles of Lexington and Concord, the first battles in a war against a tyrannical oppressor.
And Professor Blaskowitz goes on to say that for anti-federal activists, the Waco massacre symbolized a war of tyrannical government against the people. So you're seeing the symbology being applied there. Then he jumps down to Timothy McVeigh and the Murrah Building in Oklahoma City. And they're saying that he says that McVeigh bombed on the anniversary because of the symbolic importance. And that was actually a known thing. He's said that. He stated that. His fake driver's license had an issue date of April 19th, 1993, the date of the Branch Davidian fire.
Yes, that's correct. And on April 19th, 2010, gun advocates had a rally in Washington to support the Second Amendment, even though it wasn't really on the presidential administration's radar at that time. So they did that again with this April 19th date, this anniversary. This all led Professor Blaskowitz to conclude that in the mythology that's grown up around Waco and Oklahoma City among self-identified patriots, the 19th of April has become a sort of high holiday for those who think they live under the thumb of a tyrannical government.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good argument.
Absolutely.
When you see the basis there. And I have to say, I tend to agree with that because anniversaries are important to people, especially if you're trying to rally people around a cause. The problem I have with translating April into back in time to ancient practices is that the calendars differ.
Yeah, a bunch.
People before the Common Era, if you said it was April 19th, they would have no idea what you were talking about for the vast majority of the population, if not the entire population.
Yeah.
Earth just moves to its own tune and people make calendars to attempt to explain its movements and its moods. So Earth was probably doing the same thing, roughly the same thing around roughly the same time, but to ascribe a certain date to that is a human technology.
Absolutely.
So
it makes a lot of sense. Depending on where you were in the world before the Common Era, you would have a completely different calendar because everything is different.
We still don't all have the same calendar now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, what year is it in North Korea? What year is it in the Islamic calendar? What year, you know? I think it's just because we all live for so short of a time, at least for now, that all these terribly ephemeral things appear to be static, again, monolithic and unchanging. But it's not the case. April is a fad. The current calendar is a fad. Let's see if we make it to the year 3000 with this thing. But then we go to another problem, which is a psychological plot twist we alluded to in the first part of today's episode, and that is the problem of information bias. You see, it turns out that many, 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 many other terrible things have occurred during the other 11 months of the year. Like, Matt and I love August. That doesn't mean that nothing bad happens in August.
Bad things happen in August a lot, and on August 5th, my birthday. It's scary.
Sorry, man. Yeah.
It's scary.
Don't feel bad, man. Hulk Hogan was born on my birthday, August 11th.
Oh.
I don't know. So that messed it up for everyone.
Wait, it messed it up?
Yeah, it messed it up.
What about – okay, wait. Are we taking Hulk Hogan as a whole or are we taking like
– The whole Hogan. Take the whole Hogan. It's a net negative.
That is a shirt, my friend.
The whole Hogan. Oh boy, that's the whole ugly truth. Not just Pasta Mania. He had a restaurant. Was it a restaurant? Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
Oh, I've got to. Okay,
we
got
to do
stop
it.
Stop everything.
Hold the presses.
I've got to show you this. So I'm showing. Yeah, it was a restaurant, Pasta Mania. I'm showing a friend Matt. A great picture of Hulk Hogan promoting Pasta Mania,
wow.
His short-lived pasta store. Could you describe this picture, Matt?
Okay, so he's got his signature yellow shredded-up tank top, and he's also got a yellow chef's hat. He's holding up in his right hand, if this is correct, a fork full of pasta. He, in his other hand, he's just got too much pasta in a plate, a bowl of sorts. And on his shirt, it says Pasta Mania with an exclamation mark. And it is just a beautiful image.
He also has a sort of cheeky chef-style hat.
Yeah.
That's flopped over on the side, emblazoned with the same logo.
And his cross necklace.
And his cross necklace, so you know that...
He's sacrificing to the pasta gods?
Right. And these Kirsten Dunst level dead eyes. That is Pasta Mania. Yeah.
That must have been an old, was it WWF at the time? It must have been an old promotion of some sort. There's no way he went in whole Hogan on Pasta Mania.
The whole Hogan. The whole Hogan. Yeah. We've got a... No, he really did it. I could see that. I just pulled up the menu. So that moment of levity aside, it's true that terrible things have occurred the other 11 months of the year. For example, 9/11 occurred in September, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yes.
It's disturbingly easy for any human brain to dwell on information that fits a predetermined conclusion, and it's easy for us to ignore evidence to the contrary. And we've talked about this before, and I know how ridiculous it sounds when we're talking about it on a purely intellectual basis. But when you come to when you come to an emotional argument or something with which you identify emotionally, it's very tough to catch yourself in the moment. And it's happened to all of us.
Correct.
It's our habit of cherry picking things. And this we have one example, which is like, you know, if you believe that all birds can fly and you're emotionally wrapped up in this, then your brain will have an easy time discounting evidence that kiwis, ostriches, and emus and so on either A, exist, or B, birds. You know, and like, they're not really birds though, because all birds can fly.
Yeah.
And why are you hassling me about this? You're being a real pill.
Specifically kiwis.
Specifically kiwis. The most hated, right?
Yeah. Which penguins.
Oh, yeah. Penguins.
Penguins.
I've never eaten a penguin, but I have heard, I've read from historical accounts that they do have a fishy taste.
Oh, yeah. Tari is just making the, oh, yeah. She hates penguins.
Have you eaten a penguin, Tari?
Whoa, that many? See, I hope she's recording that, because if she's not, we get to make it seem like she said anything we want to, Tari.
It's true. Maybe a better example of cherry picking that will unfortunately hit home for all of us listening is if you have ever had an argument with a significant other or someone at work, especially if someone at work you don't get along with, or you know, a family member or a close friend, anyone that you're emotionally close to or see often, if you have formed an opinion about them, it doesn't really matter after a certain amount of time, whether and after a certain degree, whether or not your opinion jibes with the facts. There was an old stand-up bit wherein the comic, all right, I'll say his name, Louis C.K., horrible person, but wherein he pointed out, you know, if you don't like someone, you'll just find reasons not to like them. They can do any number of amazing, wonderful things for the world, and you'll just hate them. That's how it works, because you'll cherry pick, discount the things that they did that run counter to your opinion of them. And it works in the other direction as well. If you really, really love someone, you really, really love even like a band, or a member of a band or something.
Or a wrestler.
Or a wrestler, you know, then you'll ignore the whole Hogan and you'll just go for it. Yeah. You'll just go for the things that you find likable about that person. And this is dangerous, because we just illustrated, I think, how one other example. If we didn't get everybody in the crowd yet, here's one other example.
What, a president?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
No, for real, though.
No, that's true. Yeah.
Any president that has ever been in office, mm-hmm. that occurs to them by pretty much every American, at least.
Right. People say
– one way or the other.
Yeah. One way or the other, people say Kennedy could do no wrong, or, yeah. You know, et
cetera. Bill Clinton was the best.
Right. Right. So on. And one thing that would be a good personal example is, let's say you've been in a relationship that's at a low point, or it's not working out, and you're at the point where a lot of your arguments are the "you always do this" arguments.
Yes.
So don't let yourself emotionally get trapped there right now as you're listening, but think about it in the most abstract way you can. Are they always like that?
Yeah.
Are they really always like that?
Yeah.
Because they're probably not. Yeah. They're probably not always like that.
I have just a really personal quick example.
Sure.
I had a very, very deep dislike of, close to hatred but not quite, of a certain singer named Beyoncé when I was growing up.
Okay.
In high school. And this because of the movie Goldfinger, Austin Powers.
Uh-huh.
Because, in my opinion, she ruined that film when I was that kid. Now, look, I recently watched Homecoming on Netflix with my wife. Mm-hmm. A performance that she had at Coachella that she produced and directed. It was one of the most phenomenal things I've ever seen. It took me this long to change my opinion about Beyonce or Beyonce, mm-hmm. Miss B, whoever, mm-hmm. Queen B, whatever you want to call her.
A person that you have never met.
A person I've never met but had preconceived notions about because of a performance in a movie that I felt strongly about when I was a kid. And it took until now. But anyway, just putting that out there.
Did you feel like Goldmember was this cinematic masterpiece and then she ruined it?
Yes.
Wow.
In high school, Austin Powers was one of my favorite things. And when Goldmember happened, I was just like, nah, I can't handle this.
Wow, you felt they had fallen.
Yeah.
Wow.
But anyway, just apologies overall. And watch Homecoming. It's actually great.
I'll check it out. Yeah. And I think that's a good example because it shows us how this phenomenon of cherry picking and predetermining stuff occurs on micro and macro cosmic levels. And furthermore, kudos to you, man, because you were able to critically assess your own opinion. And it's okay for people to change their minds when exposed to new information or new experiences. I know we don't like to hear that too often in mass media. It's called flip-flopping.
Yeah.
But when new information emerges, if you want to work to your highest mental abilities, that means you have to continually assess what's going on in the world around you. Way tougher than it seems. In this case, to take it past Beyonce, past Hulk Hogan, and back to this idea of a cult purposefully sacrificing large amounts of people through very circuitous means during April, we have to say that the connection between these massive acts of violence in the month of April seemed more connected through cherry picking and the possible commemoration of previous tragedies. You know, like we don't know for sure whether the shooters in Columbine were commemorating the birthday of Adolf Hitler or Waco. While there may be something darkly tempting about connecting these events to an ancient religious practice, the evidence just does not seem to support some sort of purposeful mass sacrifice by a secret elite cult.
Yeah.
It's not there right now.
It's not. And we say that. Only what, 5 days ago, 4 days ago,
mm-hmm.
the massive fire in Notre Dame at the cathedral?
Yes, I'm so glad you mentioned that, yeah.
I mean, we're right within that range.
And we're actually recording on April 19th.
Yeah, and now speaking on the Notre Dame fire, what we know as of this day on the 19th, it seems to be, it occurred at least probably because of an electrical short or an electrical issue while repairs and or not refurbishments.
Restorations
on the cathedral were occurring, and no one was injured, at least as of now. That's what we know, that no one was injured. But still, it was this massive fire that was a worldwide story that happened.
Right. The fire at Notre Dame. And you had mentioned this too off air before we hopped in, and it had me frantically searching to see whether someone had died. It's a little bit early now for the more analytical information to come out about this, because I believe the police are still researching it. I do think it's interesting that so many people came together to donate a massive amount of money for this, for the restoration and the reconstruction of the building in so short a time.
Yeah.
And it's also true that it's entirely possible something else could happen after we record this episode or after it publishes.
Yeah. What if we – gosh, I'm so sorry. Just a couple other instances.
Sure.
The widely reported Boeing plane crashes that have occurred, and I believe they occurred mostly in March, or at least I know the Ethiopian one I think occurred in March.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these are fiery explosions that killed lots and lots of people. But they occurred right outside of this range that, you know, some of the researchers would believe is the time of sacrifice. So it just kind of leads us back to all these things. I'm just trying to throw these things out there because I know people might wonder about them or why we didn't mention them.
Yeah. And I think it's important to mention those. Furthermore, we'd like to know other events that we have not touched on that occurred in April of this year. As we know, mass media does try to cast its eye everywhere, but it promotes some stories more than it promotes others. So let us know what you think. We also want to point out there's another deeply disturbing concern here. Does the proliferation of this sort of pattern making somehow cheapen the deaths, the tragedy of the loss of the people who fell victim to these heinous acts? It's a valid question. Or are members of society simply doing what humans do best, creating patterns in a misguided attempt to make sense of a senseless, chaotic, and uncaring universe? Again, let us know.
Yeah. You can find us on social media, on Twitter and Facebook. We are Conspiracy Stuff. On Instagram, we are Conspiracy Stuff Show. Come hang out with us on Facebook on Here's Where It Gets Crazy. That's our page there. And we can have discussions. We can talk about all these things together. And definitely do that. If you want to call us and leave a message, tell us your personal stories, our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. Leave a message. You get 3 minutes. If you can't get it in 3 minutes, just call back. If you don't want to do any of that stuff, you can send us an email. We are
conspiracy@howstuffworks.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.